Hello and welcome in to a new season of The Rebel Room. I am Taylor Byrne alongside colleagues Ray Brewer, Case Kiefer, and we are here 2 days ahead of the kickoff for the 2016 UNLV football season at home, 7 p.m., 7:05 kickoff, Sam Boyd Stadium against Jackson State. We're going to talk about that game, but really we're here to kind of give you an overall preview of the season for UNLV football, what we feel like we've learned from their offseason, what kind of expectations we all have. And I kind of want to jump right into it because the quarterback situation at UNLV, look, quarterback, most important position, single position, just because of everything that they have to do for the team. It's always generally been a problem at UNLV. The lone exception in my time is when Caleb Herring, you know, zombie Caleb Herring, after he had been relegated to receiver duties, moved back to backup quarterback and suddenly had an amazing year. Other than that, it has been a very mixed bag at UNLV, and that's been true going back through the decades. So, Ray Brewer, I know you were very excited when transfer Johnny Stanton came into the program. Seemed like the heir apparent take over for Blake Decker, who was here for two injury-plagued years. But it was quite a battle, and it wasn't until Sunday night that he was named the starter over junior Kurt Palandek, both of them juniors. Johnny Stanton, 6'2", 245. He is a brick house, but the throwing is very much a question there. So I guess just Johnny Stanton's the guy. We're going to see both quarterbacks at least in the first game, probably mixed in throughout the year, depending obviously on some injury situations. But how are you feeling now that Johnny Stanton finally named UNLV's starting quarterback?
Well, it goes back to my theory about, you know, junior college players.
Which, your theory is very fungible, because
it's fungible,
you were completely against JUCO players until Blake Decker came in, and you're like, oh, well, no, he's going to be great. And then as soon as you saw that he wasn't, you immediately went back to your opinion of JUCO players. I feel like you did a similar thing with Stanton.
I'm able to use my excuse whenever I want. Here's the deal with Johnny Stanton. The kid put up great numbers last year at Saddleback JC. Led them to the California State Championship game, was great in high school at Santa Margarita, couldn't cut it in Nebraska, clearly has a confidence problem. Even if you look at Saddleback last year, they lost their first two games. He was awful. They stuck with him. He got better as the season progressed. I think he, in terms of the tools, is better than Palandek. We saw what Palandek could do last year. Great runner, can't throw the ball downfield to save his life. To get UNLV where they need to be this season, it has to be Johnny Stanton. And if he didn't start Thursday against Jackson State, his already, you know, very soft.
Wait, so you feel like you have a good read on the mentality of the kid?
I think he right now lacks a lot of confidence. I saw two of the scrimmages. He was below average at best in both of them. And body language after some of the interceptions he threw screamed to me lack of confidence. I think that an opponent such as Jackson State, which UNLV should roll, is going to give him an opportunity to have some good moments going into the UCLA game. And if he wasn't going to start, then he'd be coming in off the bench. He'd be even more nervous trying to prove that he, in fact, is this four-star recruit, this guy that can lead UNLV's new era to the promised land. So he's the better of the two, not by much. And I think if you would have went with Palandek, you already know what you're going to get from him. And maybe Stanton, when it's all said and done, could be a game manager. But you're right. My UNLV could be 4-1. UNLV's going to a bowl game. Wish I would have saw these scrimmages, because either A, the UNLV defense is darn good, or B, we've got some problems.
Yeah, we'll get into some of the overall season predictions that you hinted at there in a minute. But Case Kiefer, would you like to profess to know the inner workings of Johnny Stanton's mind?
No, and I feel like we kind of got a sport within a sport on this podcast, because we just like to pick on Brewer and whenever he says something ridiculous, gang up on him. But really, his overall point there, I kind of totally agree with. I was relieved when Stanton won the job. It just feels like we've been through the Palandek experience before, and it was not a pleasurable one. I mean, I think he completed less than 50% of his passes last year. It was just a total mess.
I agree it had to be Stanton, but what I saw in spring and then through the summer, I understand why it took them this long to make a decision. It's it's a huge question mark. And to have that at this position, look, last year, 3 wins, 3-9, easily could have been like 5-7 if you're just a little bit better at quarterback. All you had to be was a little bit better. Kurt Palandek ended up appearing in 11 games, started three of them, as we said, Blake Decker oft injured. Palandek came in 49.3% completion percentage. He had 794 yards, 9 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Was a good runner, 293 yards and 4 touchdowns on 82 attempts. But he really is, so he's listed 6'2", 185. He's given up 60 pounds to Stanton, and that's very noticeable when you just see them. Palandek, a type of guy, good runner when he can get by you. Stanton, I think one of the reasons, and not I think, Coach Tony Sanchez mentioned this, is one of the reasons that, you know, he's a little higher right now and why they ended up picking him. In the red zone, they expect him and are counting on him to bowl people over. So he was a running guy at Saddleback. He has running ability, but it's, you know, in a different way than Palandek, where he's shifty, he can beat you in the open field. Stanton's going to run you over, potentially. You know, that's kind of what they're looking at. And, you know, he is bigger than some of the linebackers that they're going to face. Obviously, in this Jackson State game, that's true. But even later in the year, once you start to get into the Mountain West slate, that's the case. You know, I remember once they got out of the 2014 season, we had seen what Blake Decker was. Ray, you and I both agreed, like, if Blake Decker is the quarterback again here, that's a disaster. But then we saw spring, we saw Kurt and all this, and we're just like, okay, Blake Decker's clearly the best option. Nothing has changed with Kurt Palandek. He's a fine runner, very wanting in the passing game, great athlete, team loves him, hard worker, he's got everybody on his side there, but he's not a quarterback. He's just not. So it had to be Stanton, but the fact that he was, you know, that they are this close in competition, I think that directly impacts my overall expectations for the season.
I totally agree. I think that the fact that we expected Stanton to pull away, he didn't do so in spring ball, and no, that was because he was getting used to, you know, the nuances of the offense, because he was thrown to a lot of walk-on wide receivers, whatever the case may be. So we thought this August, Taylor, case that he would finally pull away and shoot. He wasn't able. And I think I think Sanchez and company may have been better if they went and got like a fifth-year grad transfer, somebody who could come in for 1 year and kind of run the offense a little bit until Rodgers is ready, or Armani Rodgers.
Armani Rodgers, true freshman quarterback, 6'5", physically looks great out there. It's just, you know, learning the system. They plan to redshirt him this year, so unless something changes there, and the third string is Dalton Snead, who similarly I think could have helped the team more than Decker or Palandek at times last year, maybe. That's a question mark. He was a true freshman. But they wanted to redshirt him, and so he's now available as a third string. I fully expect to see him at some point this year.
They did a lot of work last year to build for the future. You know, you go to the Wyoming game, the game they lost to close the season, they had one tight end available for the game because they didn't want to, you know, possibly – well, they just didn't have any. They didn't even have any freshmen that they could have played. But, you know, I would have put – Snead in there against Reno. He stuck with Palandek, who managed the game.
And that was the game. You know, you give Kurt credit because he came in final drive of the first half, got a big gain and then a touchdown, and they really needed that going into halftime because they had dominated the whole first half, but I think that only put him up by 2 scores. And he nearly, you know, gave the game away in the second half, if not for the tip pass by Jeremiah Valuanga and the returned interception by Ryan McAleen, and then they probably don't win that game.
One of the happiest moments I've had in Reno in my entire life.
Well, I bet that's a short list. I mean, you enjoy your trips very much.
I mean, you're right, but I mean, yeah.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, I'm just kind of looking through the depth chart that we have here for guys that potentially could have helped them last year that they redshirted. I know Gabe McCoy, as a outside linebacker, and he and Lakeith Wells, who was a senior transfer, came in. They're looking at those guys as their edge rushers to really help Valuanga. And then Iggy Portia, actually, and this isn't someone who redshirted last year, but he's the other defensive end moving over from linebacker. But then Nick Dadashtian, another guy, defensive line, that they really liked last year, but you're trying to, as you said, build for the future. You don't want to burn a ton if you don't have to. And so that's where you have a lot of redshirt freshmen and Justin Polu on the offensive line. That's a a great example of someone that that kid could have helped. But is he? Is it better to save him and build? If you're looking for the, you know, the growth and the strength of the overall program, yes. Now, would you feel better if you had gotten four or five victories last year? Certainly, and maybe that feels like there's more to build on. But I think the long-term plan, that's the right way to go. And now, I, you know, it's just kind of on some of these guys to actually develop the way that the coaching staff expects them to.
Now, I think if you're faced with the same scenario this year and
– Do you say scenario or scenario, like regularly?
I don't know, but it's I
what are you, Case?
A scenario.
I'm scenario.
I think Brewer is too. I think I've heard him say it before.
I feel like just out like of the song, what's the scenario? Is
I've
that
never
a song?
Heard it.
I feel like that's a thing.
In my mind, I'm hearing it as scenario.
I might have just made that up. All right, move on.
Well, anyways, I think this year you're probably going to win four or five games, assuming that you beat Jackson State and Idaho. And it sucks that we have to say assuming that they beat these two teams, because we lived through the Southern Utah, Northern Arizona back-to-back year thing.
Oh, yeah. Do you want Tony's quotes on that? There was one I included in my story that's up on LasVegasSun.com today, but then another that I'm saving for the preview. And basically, like, so the first one he's talking about, and Tony was at Bishop Gorman when all those losses happened, so it wasn't him. He was saying it wasn't too long ago where all these wonderful teams were coming in and walking away with W's or us winning last-second games. Northern Colorado, UNLV won on a field goal very late. And last year, we kind of exercised that. That was a good thing to see. We need to do it again. Last year being an 80-8 victory against Idaho State. But his bigger point here in this quote from Tony Sanchez, we've got to be careful not to be arrogant. We are a proud university and a proud football program. We are working on being a team that people can depend on and rely on, but we haven't been so for 30 years. So for us to presume that we can beat anybody would be a little bit uncalled for. We have to learn to take care of our own house and win the games that we're supposed to win. I think that the thing in the middle, for us to presume that we can beat anybody, is ridiculous. It is. It's just, and that's the mentality still, and it should be, because take care of it first. 80-8 was ridiculous last year. It's nice. You know, you're trying to, you know, they don't all need to be blowouts to that proportion, but there was no doubt in the second half, and that's what a lot of games against 1AA opponents should be. But I'm not ready to assume that that's what UNLV football is.
That's true. I think this game, though, Jackson, I mean, they're not losing this game, but I think you're taking a big leap by just writing down Idaho as a win, though, too. I mean, this is a team that went 5-7 last year. I know they're coming here. UNLV is going to be a favorite, but it's not like they're going to be – I doubt they'll even be a double-digit favorite. They're going to be a double-digit favorite this week.
I feel very comfortable saying right now that they will win at least one of those games.
Okay. I can agree. I can agree on that.
I'm definitely not guaranteeing two. I'm just not. You know, it's there's so much yet to be seen, and with the quarterback situation, what it is. I know, you know, it's going to sound like that's all we're talking about, but that is so important and such a big question mark for them right now that, you know, we're not going to know probably until we get four-ish games into it.
The bottom line is that, you know, I've been around Tony Sanchez since he came to town 7 years ago, and he's always wanted to have big physical lineman to where he could line up in power eye, run his pro style stuff, and win ball games. And if you look at the size of the lineman this year, if you would have had the printout from last year's initial game depth chart to this year, you just see, you know, across the line, 290, 300, 295, 315, 290, they're going to be able to run the rock. And I think no matter who the quarterback is, if they could keep moving the chains on the ground, and you saw last year they were very good running the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, you put yourself in good situations to make your quarterback look probably a little better than he is. You know, now any quarterback's going to struggle on 3rd and 12. I don't care if you're Peyton Manning or if you're Dalton Snead. You're going to struggle on 3rd and 12. But if UNLV could get to 2nd and 6 or 3rd and 2, where you could send five guys out and have one of them turn around and you could throw it near them, get the first down, move the sticks, then maybe you have something. So I think it's, you know, don't put your quarterback in position where he has to win the game. Put him in position where he doesn't have to lose the game. You know, hand off the ball, make the short passes, maybe occasionally throw the deep ball so the safeties aren't up so close to guard the run.
I mean, that's the plan. Like Tony Sanchez has said several times during the offseason, we need our quarterback to be a game manager, not to go out and have to win it for us. But at the last scrimmage that they did, those game managers, Snead, Palandek, and Stanton, all had red zone turnovers. Like, so with that being harped on for a long time, like, you're still seeing those type of mistakes. And it's the turnovers are largely going to determine how well this team ends up finishing. You know, the over-under, most places we were looking at earlier, still 5.5. Some with a lean on the under. Others, what was it, the M had it at straight up 5, and then with plus money on the under because you're not getting the hook there. So I guess let's take it game by game here quick. So Jackson State, we're all calling that a victory, right?
No doubt.
Okay. At UCLA.
This was the game last year Brewer famously declared they had a chance. I think I gave him 28 points and won. I'm saying they have no chance again.
I agree.
What is that?
Loss. Down. Loss. That's an L. Downward.
Well, yeah, but then it's not an L.
Well, I know, but it's down.
I thought it was a gun. I thought he was, like, shooting his leg. I thought he was – I honestly thought you were saying you shot yourself in the
you
leg last year with that declaration.
I was like this?
No, I missed that. I missed all that.
Right. Wu-Tang?
No, W, baby. W.
The gun was Wu-Tang. More prominent.
Wu-Tang. Okay, either way.
This game, so pretty much guaranteed to be 1-1. Now, as we said, you can't look past Jackson State, take care of your business, and it's football, who knows, but they're losing to UCLA. So 1-1 at Central Michigan, September 17th is probably one of the games that determines whether they can get over that 5.5 mark.
I always said it defines the season, and Central Michigan's got a great quarterback, probably the best quarterback in the MAC, right, Case?
I haven't done a lot of studying on the MAC, but I do know they have a lot back, and they have pretty high expectations this year. It does look like they're kind of in a better spot than UNLV. I mean, they're definitely going to be a pretty big favorite in that game.
Well, maybe he's calling it an L.
I mean, I think you have to say an L,
I thought for months you've been calling it a win.
If this is one game they could steal, though, I mean, this would be a huge one. And I don't think they're, like, out of luck. I don't think they have no chance or anything. I just think that Central Michigan has a little more than
they'll
they do.
They'll be 11-point dogs in this game.
That's not. I agree. Right around there.
Idaho at home after that. Oh, that's a big W from Brewer.
That's a big one. I'm saying win, but if Brewer thinks it's such a big W, I mean, I think this is a close game.
I think the Rebels, even after losing at Central, will be in 9-point favorites.
9 seems like a lot. I'd probably take.
This is a Division 1A school.
Give me 9.5. I'll take it right now.
9.5.
All right. You heard it here. I'm taking the plus 9.5.
All right.
But I actually think UNLV is going to win. But I don't think they should be a double-digit favorite.
All right. So
we've
got them 2-2 in non-con then. Fresno State, October 1st. That's what blackout night. You're going to see the new Hayreb helmets, the whole uniforms, opening up the Mountain West slate. Mountain West, look, San Diego State's still great. This league is not good. So everything that was out there available last year because the league isn't good is completely there again.
Especially this division, too. I mean, if you're looking for reasons for optimism, this division's a disaster.
This may be the worst division in 1A football, potentially.
Yeah, of the ones I've looked at closely, I mean, it's not even close. It's there. Like I said, I haven't really got to the MAC yet and probably won't. But, God, this division's bad. And I think kind of the poster boy of how bad it was last year is Fresno State, who was just awful. I was betting against a lot, so I watched more of their games than I wanted to, and it was just painful. Sometimes they found ways to eke it out that made no sense, like against UNLV. But I'm saying this year UNLV gets that one back. I don't think there's a whole lot to be up for Fresno State. They're going to be a little bit better just because they can't be worse than last year, but I'm going to favor UNLV in that game.
Game means a lot to Sanchez. He's recruiting heavily in Fresno, won a few battles there. He was very disappointed how they lost last year. I know some other things. I'm 100% convinced this is the most important game behind Reno to him, hence the blackout, hence the helmets. UNLV wins this game 3-2. Next game, baby. They cover two, whatever the line is.
I know some other things. A little hint there. So Fresno State last year dropped 17 unanswered at the end to win 31-28 at home. This one, I'll agree with you. I'll give that a win. At San Diego State, loss.
Yeah, I'm saying loss, but I also, and I've argued with a few people on this, I'm not all that high on San Diego State coming into this year. I mean, I've just heard people saying, like, now, oh, this team's going to go undefeated,
What is not high on? Because there are some people who are pegging them as potentially, like, an undefeated run and all that, and I think that's a bit ridiculous.
I think that's ridiculous.
But they are, to me, clearly the class of this league.
I mean, they should be the favorite in the division. I don't think the league, though. I think Boise is in a tier of their own.
No.
Yeah, I'll take you right now. I got action with Brewer. What kind of action do I make? San Diego State, what a fluke last year. They had this – I mean, they're always good on defense. They're going to be good. They're not going to be as good as they were the last year. They had ridiculous defense. They're not going to be able to throw the ball. They had the best turnover margin in the nation last year. Recovered every fumble, which is totally doesn't happen year after year. I will take the under of whatever San Diego State's win total is right now, and I'll give you the over.
I need to know what it is, but I could potentially make that. I'm looking for when they play. Oh, that's right. I remember they don't play Boise, so they'll meet likely in the championship game. But you okay with a loss there, Brewer?
Nine is their total.
I know you're not happy with it. Nine. Let me look a little more at it. At Hawaii, October 15th, sort of like Central Michigan, just in the fact that this is a kind of the swing games. I think the road games are always kind of looked at in that regard. Hawaii, they're bad. But traveling over there has never been easy, and UNLV has lost to bad Hawaii teams before. So where are we going with this? Brewer says W. First-year coach, took over as the interim last year.
Didn't look good on Friday.
Yeah, even lost by 20.
I might have closed at 19. It was 20 for most of the offseason and pushed.
Didn't they onside kick it to start the season?
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Did they get it, though?
Who cares?
Don't be so results-oriented. That's why you're going to lose with San Diego State. I guess I'll say win. I think that it's really tough. It's kind of a toss-up at Hawaii. But three of these next four games maybe, or maybe even all the next four, I feel like they're going to win some and lose some. So I guess I'll go win here for solidarity.
Okay, so win. We'll give them a win, Hawaii. At home against Colorado State and at San Jose State. Sort of to your point, because those are the two games leading into the bye week. That feels like 1-1, and I'm not entirely sure which way to go.
Totally agree. I think I like Colorado State more in general, but switching that they get Colorado State at home and go to San Jose State, I'm not sure which one to say. But if they win all three of those games after San Diego State, I would be surprised.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be very impressive.
I think 2-1 in that stretch, even though none of those teams are anything special, I think 2-1 would be a good performance.
Yeah, I think I'll say lose at home to Colorado State and win at San Jose State.
I think they win them both. I think San Jose State's going to crash and burn.
All right. Well, the consensus for the show is still 1-1 there, so sorry.
I think Brewer. They go undefeated at home. Go ahead.
Okay. Another home game, Wyoming, so we already know what Brewer thinks there. Case?
I'll give them a win for Wyoming coming off a bye week,
somehow,
right?
Somehow they might be. Yeah, Craig Bowl, things are not working out very well there. At least I think I have. I might be confusing my former NDSU coaches. At Boise State, November 18th, loss.
Don't get hurt.
Boise State probably going to go undefeated.
Shut up. Reno, November 26th, at home for the Cannon. Can they keep it? Win two in a row for the first time in quite a while for the UNLV
Hell
Rebels.
Hell to the yeah. We don't even have to talk about that.
You see our buddy, and I do mean buddy, I like Chris Murray, but he put out his Mountain West rankings today. Reno, fourth.
That's fine. He has to do it because he has to deal with polling.
He doesn't have to do anything.
Every day.
I don't know what my record is right now. I'd kind of like to know that before I pick it, but I'm going to go with the upset here in Reno.
If Polian is the
upset from
Brewers, the game, they're going to lose.
All right, here's your deal. You hate Polian. His teams every single year when I studied the Mountain West, I noticed this has gotten better at the end of the year. He's been the best current coach in the Mountain West to bet on. He didn't get left with a whole lot, even despite the state of the program. I don't think he's as bad as you guys make him sound, I think that they're going to be pretty decent this year.
He may get an SEC job in the offseason.
No, I don't think he's great, but I don't think he's a terrible coach, and I think they're going to get the cannon back this year.
So in which situation do you think he's good to bet on? Just throughout, or you're saying
at
the end
like
of the year?
It looks like all three other years they get
gas on the sideline.
Oh my, stop.
When he made a bowl game last year and UNLV was sitting at home with a red cannon, though. I thought they were 7-6 last year.
They won the bowl
game.
6-6 is not a losing record.
They played Colorado State in the bowl game. is like basically
look,
a,
I don't want to make
friendship
look,
bowl
I'm
of
gonna,
Mountain West teams.
I'm going to stand up for Case Kiefer so that he doesn't have to defend the All Mountain West Bowl. But he is right that they were better last year just because UNLV won the one
and
game.
You were wrong.
Was lucky to win the.
They
one
did
game.
Not have a losing record. Six and six, not a losing record.
Okay.
They also are. They also got in that Akeel Lynch from Penn State.
Friendship Bowl champions.
All right, we'll see. We'll see. 9-4 against the spread record last year. That's pretty good for a coach that doesn't know what he's doing.
Oh no!
Best betting record in the Mountain West.
I realized that heading into the final game, our consensus picks already have them at 6 victories. Even though,
really,
I think I'm going to take them under for 5.5. So Jackson State, Idaho, Fresno State, Hawaii, San Jose State, Wyoming. That's 6.
Dude, they're winning every home game. They just need to win one road game.
Well, I thought I had them at 5-7, but I must have just picked them to win 6. I'm going to say 5-7 overall, though. I think a lot of those games are toss-ups.
Yeah.
And you nail me down with one, I'm going to say win, I guess. But I think the most likely scenario is 5-7, and I think 4-8 is more likely than 6-6.
Look at the schedule. You have it up on your little computer.
But, Brew, before you got in here, you're saying they're going under. Now you're super over.
Don't interrupt him.
Okay, got you.
Hold that up.
Not only am I looking at the schedule.
Hold on, let him go. I want to see where this goes.
All right.
This is all taking turns. Tell me right now, you're smart. Look at that schedule. They're going to be favored in every home game, correct? Yes.
No. Not necessarily.
Who are they going to be an underdog?
They might be an underdog to Reno. That's a pick right now.
Dude.
Colorado State. Maybe Fresno.
No way. Taylor, come on.
Fresno's possible.
Yeah. No
possible
way.
Underdog, definitely. No, I think Fresno's terrible. I like UNLV better, but who's Fresno have early in the year? They're probably going to – I wouldn't be stunned if they get off to a better start than UNLV. Right now, if there was a line on that game, I think it would be like UNLV 5.
My house payment's due that day. I might October 1st.
I'll tell you right now, they will not be favored in every home game. I would be surprised if that ends up happening.
No, they won't be. There's no
way. Who does Reno have? Am I missing something?
They return, I think, the most guys on the conference, maybe. And they have like 16 guys back.
7-6.
7-6 is better than 3-9.
Winning record.
This is the first year. He had guys that weighed less than I did playing tackle.
Yeah, well, got him a winning record and a bowl win, no matter who the bowl is against.
Well, no, he was talking about Sanchez.
UNLV.
Oh, gotcha. You were talking about UNLV.
You cannot tell me with a straight face that you think Reno's going to come in here and take the cannon.
Does my face look not straight?
I think they could.
No way!
This is why I went with it.
Look, if you force me to pick that game right now, I'm taking UNLV. With the like least amount of confidence possible.
All right.
I think there's a lot of toss-up games, and I gave UNLV the wins, and most of them we were going through, so I gave them a loss there. I think that's another toss-up game. It's about 50-50 right now, but if I'm giving them the win and more often than not, I'm going to go with a loss on that. And I am pretty high on Reno going into this year. I think they're definitely in the upper half of the conference. There's no doubt in my mind they're in upper half of this conference.
Don't say that around other people. They might look at you strange.
I'm going to get my Reno Colin Kaepernick jersey on. I'll get some really strange looks.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess our consensus picks then, when we did it game by game, was 6-6. But I mean, overall, I think Case, you and I would take them at under that, so either 5-7 or 4-8. Like if I go out and bet the 5.5 total, which I might do, I'm taking the under. And part of that is just let's see it, prove it to me. You know, there's serious questions at quarterback. You know, a couple losses. Keith Whiteley, the returning potentially, you know, injured or not injured, the returning leading rusher is no longer on the team. I think that's fine depth wise. Kendall Keyes, second leading receiver, went down. A little more concerning, but you like a lot of the weapons that they have out there. But you still got to see a lot of younger guys prove themselves, and a lot of guys that they're counting on more defensively stepping into those roles. I like the linebackers a lot. But it's still got to come together, and you got to avoid injuries. And turnovers are going to be a huge thing. And they had 9 sacks, last in the country last year, only 9. I think they're going to double that this year, but you still have to actually see it. You know, so there's a lot unproven with the team. So I think it's more likely that things kind of scuttle forward, that it's 4-8, 5-7, an improvement on 3-9, but not a bowl game, not a breakthrough. But as we looked at it game by game, you know, we got to nearly 6-6 or even 7-5. Like, as we mentioned, there's a lot of toss-up games here, especially in the middle of the schedule, that will, you know, determine how we look at this year. And that's a decent place for UNLV to be in, I think, in the second year of Tony Sanchez. I mean, this is currently a football school, because if you were to go poll students on campus, I'm very confident that almost, you know, I'll say maybe 5% could name more than three current UNLV basketball players. And I'm not saying that they can name a whole lot of football players, but that generally isn't the case. You know, it's a very much downtime for basketball, and with excitement behind, you know, an improved, but still, you know, it was still 3-9 last year, but there's still a lot of people getting excited, and Tony Sanchez, great salesman, all of that. Now they get a chance to prove it.
Yeah, and I've used this before, but it's kind of amazing to me. We mentioned their win total in sportsbooks is 5.5. And really, you look at where the numbers moved, and like the sportsbooks have gotten some money on the under, but they're not getting just flooded with under money. And it's kind of amazing to me to walk into a sportsbook and see 5.5 with UNLV. I don't think it's ever been that high since I've been here. And
two years ago, it was 2.5.
Yeah,
and maybe,
I mean,
maybe 3 years ago, the bowl year.
Yeah, and I mean, and there's not a whole lot of people protesting it. So I think that shows growth, and I don't think there'd be anything wrong with a 5-7 season. I know that's not their goals. They would like to do better than that, but I think at 5-7, you're showing another sign of progress, and then next year, you can really take the next step. I just think that's the most likely.
I mean, especially since now you're going to lose a couple of the starting linebackers, but a lot of the guys are still, you know, sophomores and juniors. And so 5-7, build off of that, setting up for year three. I think that would be a tremendous outcome for them. Sure, they want 6-6. They want a bowl game. They, you know, you're always going to want more. But looking at it realistically, I think 5-7 would be a just fine 2016 for UNLV football. Ray Brewer, I will give you the last words. What are your feelings? 2 days now, recording this on Tuesday. You and I will both be at the Jackson State game. You're going to be at many of the games this year. What do you think? What are you feeling?
You know, I'm excited because I know that this team is better than what we've seen. But at the same time, I know that without having a quarterback who could sling it around, and if, say, said quarterback that can't sling it around would get injured, which UNLV quarterbacks have got hit a lot because of the experience of the line. If you look at it, freshman, sophomore on the depth chart, the quarterback situation really worries me.
And that is the paramount question for UNLV football. It always is. Questions abound, answers soon to come. We will see how it plays out. I'm excited for a year of football. Season always sneaks up on you, but it's good. This feels about right. Temperature taking a small little dip here. We'll see the sonic boom of the South hanging out with the Jackson State band. That'll be just a fun environment for everybody. Get down to Sam Boyd Stadium. Tickets are dirt cheap. You have no excuse, at least once it's not 110 degrees, at least you don't have an excuse anymore. Get out there. It's fun. It's a good time. Support UNLV football. For Case, for Ray, I'm Taylor, and we'll talk to you guys next week.